Let's Love do Hope it. Radio.
Oh, yeah. It's a private Saturday. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. African American Empowerment. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. This is your main man, Marvin Rome. Coming to you live once again. We got Dr. Bruce in the house. We're retelling and recalling our own stories. And we're going to do that because that's what we do. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. And there is no other way to do it. There's no other way and no better way. And to discern what better love is, and apply it to our life. Oh, yeah. Welcome, brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, to African American Empowerment Saturday. You can say Aboriginal American Empowerment Saturday if you want. Or you can say Black Empowerment Saturday. Or you can say colored, Negro, whatever you want to say. Whatever you think applies to this group right here, the group that has made it through slavery and segregation and red line and black codes and you name it, right? We've been there. So when I say, oh, yeah, I'm saying, oh, yeah, because we made it to another Saturday, right, in this system. Oh, yeah, that's right. We have made and we have the most intelligent African-American people to come through this line that I've seen in my life, educated, right? Dignified, respectful. Right. See, on this line, we don't do arguing and fussing and cussing and hanging up on each other. No, it's about empowerment. It's about empowering our people. Right. We're doing it for our ancestors and they deserve it. But not only do they deserve it, we deserve it. And not only do we deserve it, our children deserve it. And guess what? Not only our children, but our children's children deserve it. And when we get on board with African-American empowerment across the board, we're talking about politics, having a mechanized system for how we're going to deliver our services, right, our ways, our behaviors, our actions, our activities within this system. See, y'all want to plug in later, but you need to plug in now because these are the things that you need to enact in your life in order for to be more effective individually and collectively. We got to have the peace concept. We got to have peace within us and within our communities, within ourselves and within our families and other stuff as well, right? But when you're talking about having an effective, mechanized political agenda for African Americans, things change. When you start talking about having an effective and an efficient economic mechanized system for African American financial empowerment, oh, things change. When you talk about understanding the laws and how to navigate this system, oh, things change. When you talk about how to keep our people from being incarcerated and making those mistakes that give us years behind bars, things change. When you talk about getting our aid, the athletics, health, wellness, and fitness and nutrition together, along with our mental and emotional health and well-being, oh, things will change. When you talk about teaching and developing cultural, relevant cultural programs in and out of the school systems that our children work and learn in, oh, things change. When you start thinking about how we can begin to have a comprehensive educational program worldwide, nationwide, statewide, and locally, things will change. We need economic development. We need economic improvement. We need economic empowerment. And I'll say it until the last breath. Have money and don't know how to use it, we're in trouble. That's one thing. But then if we don't have mental and physical and emotional health and wellness, that's another thing. Right? So we got to bring it all together. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about bringing all the pieces together to have a comprehensive education for our people where we learn to navigate where we are. And if we want to leave, we can do that too. If we want to build communities for ourselves, by ourselves, with ourselves, we could do that too. And then we can protect and defend those as well. And we can use the legal system to do that as well. Oh, no, we're not dumb anymore. Oh, no, all that walking around, all of that old stuff is over. It's behind us. Again, when people start being negative towards you because of your color, you just say no. No. Mm-mm. No, we're not doing that anymore. We're not doing that. Just say no, right? Not no to drugs, alcohol. Say no to ignorance now because we know who we are. And now, it's the Stan Macklin moment. We'll be right back.
Man, oh, yeah. Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Thank you, Brother Stan. And for you all who don't know, Stan Macklin was my co-host and mentor for many years, and he helped me to build this program to where it is now. So I will acknowledge him, whether you like it or not. Every Saturday, you're going to hear the same thing when it comes to that, because that's my brother, and he'll live in and through me and us. And now,
but we must unify. And don't, let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
Institutions that define our own reality. Original kings and queens. That's education. That's knowledge. And that's power. And that's what we're doing. That is what African-American empowerment is all about. When we start to have institutions that define our own realities, where we are establishing and not having to beg or ask or plead for anything, that we're doing it on our own. We're producing again. Let's become producers. And now, this is my favorite segment, Brother George. Come on. Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Tell a friend. Call. Oh, yeah. Come on, brother. Oh, yeah. Bring it, brother.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. Brother George.
Yes, sir, brother.
Welcome. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good. All praise due to God. And I also want to thank Brother Stan for his contributions to our people while he was amongst us. You know, he's with the ancestors now, and I'm sure he's in a great place. So I appreciate you.
That's
appreciating
right.
that. Now today, yes, sir. Today from the Nguza Saba, the Kwanzaa principle is umoja, which is unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, race, and nation.
I like it.
Umoja, unity, according to the traditional African perspective, every living thing comes from the same spiritual source. And therefore, everyone and everything is equally deserving of respect. When we have the realization that all life is one, we begin to open our hearts to others and we receive blessings in return. We can see that it is in our best interest to hold the best interest of all at heart. We understand that what we do to another, we do to ourselves, and we are always careful in our relationships to respect all life. You know, we got that saying in our community, what goes around comes around. So today, it's ironic, I didn't even think about it when I did it, but today with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm reading out of a book called The Psychic Examination of Slavery's Haunting Effects on the Conscience of Black Men and Women, Breaking the Curse of Willie Lynch, The Science of Slave Psychology by Brother Alan Morrow. I'm reading from chapter 7. Willie Lynch's fear phenomena of true history. In other words, of our people learning the truth. For the slave masters to justify an act of mental genocide, they realized then and now that the first casualty of war must be the truth. This is what is referred to as shaving off the brute's mental history. The phenomena that Mr. Lynch and other slave masters feared was the so-called Negro savages' psychological reaction upon the moment of receiving a true historical revelation about themselves. This fear represents to the slave master a loss of control, major lifestyle adjustments, and the actual loss of an entire civilization that was based on superficial speculation that gave them the mental edge over the societies that make up the human population. Over the last century, we have witnessed this fear manifested in the Eurocentric man's aggression to be the center of power through dishonest media, sanctions, and acts of physical violence on people of color. What do the so-called most powerful people on the planet fear? And have they become enslaved to the guilt produced by the lies, mistreatment, and control tactics that we're used to in making the African a mental slave? Since we are dissecting the powerful nature of truth, let us understand that the truth is a two-edged sword that cuts the presented as well as the presenter. Therefore, in breaking the curse of Willie Lynch, the two spheres of thinking that allow this mind to exist must both be really of truth, reality of truth. Now, I want to kind of address that. What they were saying was that this economy was built on slavery. And so at the time, for our people to learn the truth and change our thinking, it would take away that rich economy because we would begin to be defiant towards being enslaved on a more wide range. Because the same thing was going on in different parts of the world, they referred to people of color in general. They didn't necessarily have people as slaves, chattel slaves, the way they did in the Americas, but they controlled our people's economy and different other people of color's economies throughout the world, and they still do today. And so that's what they were referring to. But I think that the part about the truth, you know, being expressed to our people is self-explanatory. I think that part is self-explanatory. But they don't want us to learn the truth because they survive off of us. It's like a parasite that survives off of us, and we just don't know, you know, that we need to pull that leech off and start stop their blood from being sucked from us, you know. But that's me, Brother Marvin, and if you don't have any questions, back to you.
All right, thank you, Brother George. And the question of the week, the African-American empowerment question of the week, when you speak to the truth. And you mentioned it, but I wanted you to go a little deeper. What is the truth? That truth that today's African-American or that today's African Aboriginal or American Aboriginal, our people, black, colored Negroes, need to know today?
Well, by now we should have figured out. No, I'm not going to say that because that's like insulting our people's intelligence, because if you haven't been taught something, then you can't really be held accountable for knowing it. But there was a reason why they did not want us to read or write. because in doing so, we would probably end up reading and writing about information that dealt with our people in the past, because we wrote most of the books that they had in their library, the books of value. And so if we started reading the books in their library, there's something about the human mind that when it sees information that comes from its past, it will identify with it, and it will have a reaction to that person that's reading it. And so that's why they didn't want us to read, and they would kill us if they found out that we were reading. You know, that's a hell of a penalty for just reading some information. So it was more to it than that. But right now, you know, today, that's why more than ever, we need to read as much information as possible to educate ourselves to who we are as a group of people. And so that's what it's about, Brother Mark.
Thank you, Brother George. So eloquent and so factual. Thank you, Brother. Brothers and sisters, it is the practice of unity and collective work and responsibility. That is our truth as well. We need each other. Listen to me, brothers and sisters. We need each other. Somebody need to say that to themselves over and over again. We need each other. No more that I don't need him, I don't need no man, I don't need no woman, I don't need to mess with that Negro or whatever. We need each other. We need to love on each other. We need to teach each other. We need to help each other. We need to educate each other. We need to uplift one another. We need to take time to say, how are you today, brother? How are you today, sister? What do you need? How can I be of service to you? And that is our truth. Because once we start to cooperate with each other, man to woman, woman to man, family, brother and sister, community and family, we can't go wrong. And that's the truth. When we bring it together, everything will change, but it's up to us to begin to do that work today. And the challenge is whether you are willing to do it. Either you do it or you don't. But if we don't, there's more trouble down the road. That's the word for today. We got Slido, Slido.com today. Go on over there and why Dr. Bruce is giving his story. 1-1-7-3-5-5-0, Slido.com. Go on out there. 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. Join us today in the conversation, right? We're talking about telling and recalling our own story. See, we have a great story, right? We come from great communities, right? And some of them have been dysfunctional, but we had to work our way through. And these are great stories and great lives that we take for granted. And so we're going to recall and tell our story today with Dr. Bruce. And the theme is, who is Dr. Bridges, or Dr. Bruce Bridges, part two in this series of telling and recalling our stories. But also, this show is dedicated to Richmond's own, one of our brothers, Randall Robinson, and Dr. Bruce will tell you more about that when he come on in just a minute. Again, 845-277-9250. It's family time. Call somebody and say, hey, you need to join into this African-American Empowerment Saturday show that is really expanding that network or that net around the country. And now, without further delay, it's our brother from another mother, Dr. Bruce. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bring it. My bro. Oh, yeah. Bring it, Dr. Bruce.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. We ain't going nowhere. He right here, y'all. Dr. Bruce is in the house. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show. How are you, brother?
Okay, my brother. What about you, Brother Marvin, Brother George?
Oh, we doing fine. We got you in the house. We got you.
Yeah.
Brother.
Yeah.
Hey, let me just say this, right? You have to understand who you're listening to, right? Y'all, do your research on Dr. Bruce, right? He is one of the best historians in the country, if not in the world, Dr. Brother George said that earlier today, and I concur. So, Dr. Bruce, thank you so much for spending your time in our online classroom, and we're going to continue to try to work in these cities to bring you to cities so our people can get to know you more and more. So I'm going to turn it over to Brother George, and then, Brother George, you can turn it over to Dr. Bruce.
And I got a question for Brother George, too, after he makes his comments. Go ahead, brother.
All right.
Go ahead. Give me the question first.
Okay, good. I think that might be better. I don't know where you're coming in on this, Brother George, but you know I'm always telling people about the program, and I told a friend of mine about the program, and I hope the friend is listening now, and I told her what the topic was about telling our story, and by her responding to me as she did, it might be good because it give you a chance to say what this is about, because she said to me after I told her what the program was about, she said, you know, I live in the future, not the past. I'll tune in, though. So why are you all having these programs on with me and Dr. Maxwell and some other people who are going to be having, talking about the past? Why is that important? That's the question.
Well, the past is what dictates what the future is going to be. If you have no past, then you have no present and you have no future. That's
okay.
The problem with our people today is that our people, the only past that we know is the slave past and the relationship of subordination to the Europeans in America and throughout the world. That's what we know now. But we don't know anything beyond that, because that's been hidden from us, because if we learn that, then the other part don't work. It's just like Dr. Amos Wilson used to quote often, they can't be who they are if we stop being who we've been being. They can't be who they are if we stop being who we're not, to a certain extent. And so I just, you know, think it's vitally important that we learn about our great scholars, because sometimes, you know, you learn things in religion. And one of the passages in the Bible talks about people seeing a representation of the word or the word and say, didn't know what you was looking at. You didn't know that that right there was the sign that you were looking for, because you don't know the answers to your prayers. You don't know how to recognize the answers to your prayers. That was a quote from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He used to say that back in the day, that you got to learn how to recognize the answers to your prayers, because they're coming, but you don't recognize them because you think it's going to come, you know, floating down from the sky or something like that, but it's going to be a human being that walks right up to you and tries to give you what it is that you asked for. Either it's an engagement that you was invited to go and experience, and the answer to what it was that you prayed for was right at that engagement, and you never went. So our people have to become more concerned with our historical past and those who are willing to present it to us, because they are people that are highly favored, and they sacrifice. They sacrifice their lives instead of just pleasurable, you know, just drinking drinks and getting high and partying and all that. They spend their time in the library and the research centers to find out information so they could bring it back to our people, to try to put our people in a better predicament than what we're in today. And so it is vitally important that we listen to our historical past and those who represent that. And that is why today I would like for Dr. Bridges to focus on some of those sacrifices that he had to make in order to be who he is today. And so with that, I give you Dr. Bruce Bridges.
Thank you very much, Brother George, and thank you for the introduction, and also thank you for answering that question, because that was a question that I got even before we started about the past. Why is a person's past important? So I wanted you to deal with that. So I think it was important that we talked about that. And because you even had to get me to kind of understand it, because I'm, you know, I didn't really want to do it, but you said that it's important and people will definitely get a lot out of hearing it. So I'm taking you at your word. Okay. Anyway, I think last time, Brother Marvin, Brother George, we left off last time. We were talking, I think, about my growing up in Durham, North Carolina, in MacDougal Terrace, which is, as you say, a project in Durham, North Carolina, which still exists, even though it's somewhat different than what it was when we were growing up in MacDougal Terrace, but it does still exist. And that's what we were talking about last time we were on. And what I'm trying to do is to let our listeners know that we are who we are because of our past, how we grew up in our homes, our household, our church, our mosque, the streets, in the clubs, in the speakeasies, and the nightlife, and whatever it is that formed us, happened to us as children growing up, as young people growing up. All of us, and mine and yours, is no different from anybody else's in terms of what formed us as a people or as an individual, not as a people. And you see, Brother George, I'm so used to talking about, as you said, two other things. That's why I said as a people, but this today is individual. And I remember growing up, and the first time I was introduced to anything at all about our African past, I remember being in the fifth or sixth grade, I think, and I was at a school called Burton School, which also still exists in Durham, North Carolina. And it was the year that Ghana had just become independent from Britain. And I was influenced by the speaker there because I had never heard any of my teachers say anything at all about Africa. That's not to say they didn't, because I may have just missed it, but I don't think they did. But just to, you know, set the record straight. But we had the speaker to come to our elementary school as an ambassador for the country of Ghana in West Africa, and he talked about his country and what they were doing and how they were getting along since they were not under the leadership of the Queen. As a matter of fact, the Queen at that time was Queen Elizabeth, who just passed. But so I was inspired when I heard him talking about Africa. I said, oh, he's talking about Africa. We don't hear much about Africa. So that was something that really inspired me as a person, Brother Marvin and Brother George, and to those who are tuned into the podcast for the first time or hadn't been with us in a while, Brother Marvin is the host of the program, and Brother George is the last voice that you heard before I came on. And they are producing the program. And, of course, shout out to Dr. Maxwell for telling our story, and that's what we're doing, telling our story. So I was very inspired by that. Now, also, in the little elementary school that I went to, our books were secondhand books from white students. And I often read those books over and over and over again, and especially the spelling book. And in my fourth grade, since we're going all the way back, I won a spelling bee. The school had about five different classes of students in the fourth grade, and those students, they would take the best three students out of all of those classrooms in the fourth grade and put them on the stage in front of everybody else. And they would call, there'll be a teacher who would call words out to the students. And when you got two tries at spelling the word, two or three tries at spelling the word, if you couldn't spell it, you sit down and go on back to the audience. And the whole school was there at the spelling bee for the fourth grade spelling year. And I was the last person on stage. I won the fourth grade spelling bee in my little elementary school. And to me, I didn't take it as really being a big deal. But when I left school after winning the spelling bee, because the spelling bee would come near the end of the school day, and it was time to go home, and I was leaving Burton School and walking down through the park and past the recreation center and going home to my apartment in the projects of Durham, North Carolina. And before I could get home, somehow adults and other people in the community who I passed along the way or who passed me along the way learned that I had won the spelling bee, and they were congratulating me, and they were happy about it. And like I said before, it wasn't a big deal to me. It was not a big deal to me,
all right,
Marvin. But as I think about it, when I got older, the person who I defeated in the spelling bee, next to the last one on the stage, she was not from the projects. And this is no aspersion to her, because casting no aspersion on her, she's gone to the ancestors. But she's a good friend of mine. We were all good friends, brothers and sisters and everything. But she's from a different neighborhood. And her neighborhood was a so-called little upper crust neighborhood when it's compared to us. Not really, because it was near the projects, but it was still not a project. It was a private home. She had her own home growing up in. We were in an apartment in the project. So I guess because, Brother Marvin, that I won the contest and I defeated the last person on stage who was someone from another community and not, say, from the hood, people in the hood were excited. They were excited.
All right.
You understand what I'm saying, Marvin?
Mm-hmm.
They were excited.
Yes, sir.
About them.
I like it.
Yeah, George, what do you think? They were excited about it. And like I said, it didn't mean that much to me. As I think back on it and look back at my own past, as I'm telling my story today, I can see why, because it inspired some people to try to do some of the same things. And George, you were trying to come in and ask me something. Go ahead.
No, I said they were excited and inspired by what you've done, because that wasn't normal in our community. It wasn't normal,
exactly,
to, you know, for a kid like you to win the spelling bee.
No, it was not. It definitely was not. It was considered more normal for the people in the other communities who, like I said, whose parents had probably finished school, because some of them who lived in the lady, the sister who I defeated, her parents, her father was a musician and a music teacher, and her mother worked at the college, and they had both been to college and graduated from college, and they grew up in their own home. So you're right about that. And whereas, of course, I grew up in a home, no mother, no father that went to school. My mother didn't go to school. My father didn't go to school. And most time, my father wasn't even there. And so it was a different situation. I guess it was something that really caused them to become enthusiastic and to feel good about themselves. And it reminds me of another incident in my life when I was growing up, as all this relates, when we would listen to the fights on Saturday night, the boxing matches, when Joe Louis and Emil Griffith would be fighting, and Floyd Patterson and some of the other, and Muhammad Ali. And it was inspiring to see those fights on television, because we never saw black people on television, you see. So
right.
I guess it did make a difference. And another incident that I can recall in our community when I was growing up, and that is a library. We had a library in our community. Even though it was in the projects, and even though it was low income, there was a little small library in the community, and the library in the community was not a standalone library, but it was in the same building where you would go to pay your rent, or where you would go to check out equipment such as lawnmowers and snipping shears to cut your grass. But there was a library, and I used to go in that little library every day and read books that I could put my hands on. And I recall never, ever hardly reading about anything black. The only thing I can recall reading about in the library that was of a cultural-based type material was Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poetry. And I loved Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poetry that I read in the library. And I'd also read the poetry of Langston Hughes. And eventually, because of reading so much poetry, I myself started to write poetry. And the writing of poetry, George, was that your that I just heard?
Yes, sir.
That's a new one. You never knew that. But when I was in about the fifth or sixth grade in elementary school, I wrote a poem called Jim Crow Has Got to Go. And it was about segregation in the South, and that poem was published in Jet Magazine. And I had really forgotten about it, George, until you all asked me to tell this story. But, you know, I'm not comfortable really doing this because I don't like talking about myself like this. I'm very uncomfortable. I'm letting you know that. But anyway, I learned to write poetry, and that poem, Jim Crow Has Got to Go, and Floyd McKissick, who was the head of the NAACP in Durham at the time, someone said to me that I should let him get that poem and let him see it. So I went up to his office at about maybe 13, 14 years of age, somewhere around that age. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, I took my poem, and he said, this is good, this is good. And it was published in Jet Magazine, and it was also published in the school newspaper. So I became known for being a poet of sorts at the time, you see. And it was because I read that poetry. I love Paul Laurence Dunbar. When Paul Laurence Dunbar said, I seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. Held her hand and squeezed it tight. Jump back, honey, jump back. And it goes on. But that poetry in that little library with those secondhand books from the white folks side of town inspired me to become a poet and to start writing. And eventually from Paul Laurence Dunbar, I began to read Langston Hughes and County Cullen. And I read these poems, and I really liked that, you see. And it's because of that library. So libraries and books and those kinds of things in the environment of young people is very, very important. And then there was something strange that happened after leaving the elementary school and going into high school. Integration had hit America, and so we were bused from my community in MacDougall Terrace all the way across town to the white school, which was called Durham High School. Right now it's called Durham School of the Arts, but now that time it was Durham High School. And actually before then it was Carr Junior High. I went to Carr Junior High. I went to a junior high school which was white, and that was my first introduction really of being around white people when I went to Carr Junior High School. Because understanding now to our listeners this afternoon on the podcast, understanding now that during that time everything was black. The whole project that I lived in was black. Today it's not, though, but that project was black at the time, MacDougall Terrace. The washerette that we washed our clothes at on Saturday night because we didn't have a washing machine, which was also right in the community. Black people owned and operated that. The store where we bought our pounds of bologna and where we bought the 2-4-penny cookies, that store was operated by somebody black. And along the same strip in my neighborhood, there was a barber shop where we got our hair cut. That was black barbers and black beauticians along the same strip. Because as I talked about on last week, this was just in a small community in Durham, North Carolina. But Durham, North Carolina was known as the mecca of black capitalism in the United States, you see. So growing up like this and then being shocked by going across town to a white junior high school and being in class with white people, as I think back on it, those white people did not want us there. At the time, I was not sensitive and I was not cognizant enough to understand that they didn't want us there, because I remember asking some of the white teachers some questions, and I can remember, as I think back on it, their reactions to me for asking the kinds of questions I was asking, and I could tell they really didn't have time for us. But integration, of course, due to Dr. King and the march and all that, was forced upon black America. It was forced integration, you see. So we had to go to those white schools, and as I think back on it, it's an experience that really shaped me, because I got to see white people for what they are. And I talked about this, I think, on last week, but there are some people who missed last week, and I'm going to repeat it. I remember when I went to Durham High School, I found out they had a swimming pool, but they covered the pool up because they heard that the niggas were coming. And I'm saying the way they would say it, I don't use that term, but that's the way they put it. They heard that the niggas are coming, let's cover up the swimming pool. We don't want them in this pool, you see. So At the time, I didn't know it, but when I found out about it later, I began to see them for what they were, you see. And then I recall going to classes and flunking classes and becoming a very poor student in the white environment. Not that I really was a poor student or couldn't get the material, but because I didn't see myself in anything in that environment. And this is why it's important, and I think back on you again, Brother George, about why these conversations are important, because it's important that we see ourselves in the picture. And this is why when I lecture today, I'll always ask the question, not always, most times I ask the question depending on what I'm talking about, but I'll ask the question, what would happen if you saw a picture of a group and you were in that picture, and then that picture is developed? That's the old school way of talking. You don't have to develop pictures nowadays. Just take a picture on your phone. But if somebody take a picture of you in a group on their telephone and then show you the picture, what's the first thing you'll look for in that picture, Brother Marvin?
You'll look for yourself.
That's exactly
definitely
right.
Look for yourself.
You will look for yourself. And as I think back on it, as to why my grades coming from the black school were good grades, high grades, known as a poet, known as a person going to the library and reading, but then I go to the white school, my grades drop. But it's because not only because I didn't see myself a lot in the books at the black school, but at least I had black teachers who were inspiring me and talking to me and telling me to learn and to do the best I could and that kind of thing. The white school, you were not only not in the books, but you also not in the population in the schools. So you were almost totally isolated from yourself and your own people. And due to this isolation in this white environment, and then when you start to go to classes, I remember having classes in biology, and I always loved science and biology and studying nature and those kinds of things, but there was never anything. And went to the white schools, they don't even mention, not even a George Washington Carver, you see. And so it's very important that you see yourself in the picture. If not, you're not even interested in the picture. And I always give this example when I go places to speak. Because if you're visiting a friend and the friend is not quite ready, and you all are going out, but they're not quite ready, and they got to get in the shower, and you see a photograph book on the coffee table, and you start looking at the pictures. If you're not in that picture, or nobody that you know is in any of those pictures in that photograph album, you're not interested. You really have no interest at all. And this is why African-American people have had no interest in science and math and technology and engineering and botany and in the humanities that we study when we study the Renaissance and we study Shakespeare and we study Macbeth, and we don't see ourselves in any of that. We have no interest in it. It's very simple. We have no interest. So this is why programs like this are important, because we have to have some interest developed in us and who we are. And not to get off on it, Brother George, because I told you have to manage me and keep me on time, because you see I'm talking about myself now. And I mentioned in this, having a discussion, an intellectual discussion with a friend of mine about Macbeth and Macduff and about Shakespeare and his plays. And at the time, he was an actor. He didn't know that he had anything to do with Shakespeare, and I didn't know, and I was interested in those plays and liked to read them. But now that we're studying and finding ourselves, we're understanding that Shakespeare was a man of color, that Macbeth was a man of color, that Macduff was a man of color, and all those Shakespearean sonnets and everything were about black people and written by black people. And that's another subject for another time, but nobody ever taught us that. And we thought that that was remote, or that was far from us, that was distant from us, you see. So when we were growing up in the black community, we saw ourselves in the grocery stores. We saw ourselves in the washerette. We saw ourselves when we went to the barbershop. We saw ourselves when we went down to Hayti. And we saw ourselves when we went to buy records and all kinds of things. So it made a difference. So when the human being, male or female, Chinese, Japanese, Hawaiian, whatever the case may be, Latino, Latino X, whatever the case, when you don't see yourselves, you become isolated from reality, you see. So I noticed that's one thing that happened in high school, at the Durham High School. And another incident that I can recall growing up and going to high school with white people, and that is they're always going to put themselves first. And going out for the basketball team and trying to play basketball and doing quite well in the basketball practice and trying to make the team and jumping for rebounds and blocking shots and dunking and all those kinds of things that I was doing, it was not good enough, I thought, when I was cut from the team. But I didn't know at the time that I was cut not because of my ability, but I was cut because of the fact that I had become active in the civil rights movement in Durham at an early age, and my name had been in the paper, and my poems had been in the paper, and various other things, and white people knew this. And so they felt that I would be a problem if I would play on the basketball team. So I learned, as H.R.A.P. Brown said in his book, Die Nigga Die, that everything in America is political. And we talked about this on last week, and I sound like I'm repeating myself, as they say, sound like a broken record or a scratch CD, I should say now to make it update, sound like a scratch CD. But there are some people who are listening today who haven't heard this program before. But what you find out is that white people want Kyrie Irving to keep his mouth closed. They wanted Muhammad Ali to keep his mouth closed. They wanted Jim Brown not to say anything. They wanted Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Russell not to say anything. They wanted Harry Edwards out in California not to organize those athletes to stand up with Muhammad Ali and to speak out against the system and to get Tommy Smith and John Carlos to put up the Black Power symbol during those New Mexico Olympics. They didn't want that. And I'm repeating this because I know we talked about it on last week, but we're not in a hurry, as Brother Marvin said, and we're learning, so we have to repeat sometimes, but plus there are some new people. But they want us to just work for them and to do what they want us to do and to not think. And if you're a basketball player, dribble the ball, pass it to the center, go down in the corner, put up a jumper, a layup, or dunk, but don't think. Don't make any comments. Don't stand up because of the death of Trayvon Martin. Don't stand up for Martin Aubrey in Georgia. Don't stand up for George Floyd. Don't stand up for anything. Just take that racket, Venus, and hit that ball, Serena.
Come on, Dr. Bruce.
That's all we want you to do.
Tell it.
That's what they want us to do. And I was not the type. Brother George, I'm getting back on the subject. I was not the type at that time, or never have been the type at that time, to go along with any and everything that this system or this society says. And the reason that I am not and have not and hope I will never be is because at an early age, I was influenced by reading. Still talking about my journey and about my story, Dr. Maxwell, if you're tuned in, still talking, I'm on the subject. At an early age, I read Huey P. Newton, Seize the Time. At an early age, I read Soul Dad Brothers, George Jackson's book. At an early age, I read Mao Zedong's Red Book. At an early age, I was introduced to Muammar Gaddafi's book called The Green Book, these black revolutionaries. I was reading the newspapers and reading about this brother named Stokely Carmichael, who was the head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and who had become the president of SNCC. And then I was reading about his successor, H-Rap Brown, who came after him and stood up for our people. And these were young students. They weren't old men and old women. Stokely Carmichael, when he stood in this country against this system, was a Howard University student. H-Rap Brown was a student at Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You see, Huey P. Newton was a student at San Francisco State Junior College with Bobby Seale. They were students who formed the Black Panther Party after they heard about it down in Lowndes County, Alabama, where the Black Panther Party actually originated. So my point is, I was a student, though I was behind them somewhat chronologically or age-wise, but I was learning and I was growing, and this is what white people don't want us to do. They don't want us to listen to programs like this, Brother Marvin. They don't want our listeners who listen to this podcast to spread the word and tell other people about this program that comes on every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock and continues until 3:30, and spread the word around in your churches and spread the word around in your clubs and with your people that you have coffee with at Starbucks. They don't want other people. They don't want us to hear this kind of stuff. And I can think of an example. As I go on my journey, I'm kind of jumping back and going forth. It's not in any organized fashion, so please forgive me. But I remember when I was in
Africa. Take your time, brother.
I remember when I was in Africa with Tito Jackson and Marlon Jackson of the Jackson 5 on a trip with several mayors, several black mayors from cities in America. They put together this trip, and I was invited to go on this trip because one of my former students had become a mayor in a small town in North Carolina, and he organized this trip to West Africa, and Marlon and Tito Jackson were on the trip. And I spent quite a bit of time with Tito, more so than Marlon. Brother Tito was a little more serious and interested in learning than I found Marlon to be. Both good brothers, though. But Tito asked me one time when I was, because I was always teaching when we would go around to different events in Nigeria, in Lagos, and I would give him information about the history of Nigeria and the various tribes of Nigeria, and I talked to him about the missionaries and their impact on Nigerian culture. And he would ask me, he was saying, how do you know all this? He was very impressed by my knowledge. And I said to him, I said, Tito, while y'all was singing and dancing, I was reading.
Yes, sir.
That's how I know what I know. And now I'm passing it on to you. And then I asked him a question. And this is what really made me realize how white people want us to be. I said, this is your first time in Africa. It wasn't my first time. And, of course, the Jackson 5 are much more well-traveled than I am, than most of us are. And I say, well, this is not my first time in Africa. This is your first time? Tito said, out of all the years that they had been singing and dancing, and this took place in about 2011, I think, when we were over in Nigeria, 2012. But anyway, he said, out of all my years, this is the first time I've been in Africa. I said, wait a minute now, Jackson 5, y'all never went to Africa? He said, no, we performed before the Queen of England. We opened up for Bob Marley in Sao Paulo, Brazil. We've been all over the world, but we've never gone to Africa. And there's a reason for that. These white managers and agents do not want black entertainers nor black athletes or any of our celebrities to come into any kind of consciousness, because it's recognized by the power structure that Drake has a forum, Beyonce has a forum, Puff Daddy and Jay-Z, they have a forum. Rihanna, they have forums. They're influential, and they can get to people when they speak or when they perform. And white people don't want our people to ever come into contact with any kind of light or any kind of knowledge. They want to keep us in darkness. And when you have a forum or when you have influence among our people, They want to keep you away from our people. So Jackson 5 had never been to Africa. They didn't want Jackson 5 to come into any kind of African consciousness. And I go back to Curtis Mayfield. When Curtis Mayfield, who was one of my favorite groups when I was growing up, got to keep this tied to myself now. When I was growing up, I loved Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions. And the reason I liked Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions was because Curtis Mayfield had some consciousness and some knowledge and information in his songs that he wrote himself. The poor little student, Curtis Mayfield, third grade, eighth grade education, when he dropped out to join Jerry Butler, I saw his report card in the documentary. His mother showed his report card. She said, I ain't never think Curtis was going to be nothing because his grades were so terrible. But maybe his grades were terrible because he wasn't interested in what was going on in the schools. But he did like to read Paul Laurence Dunbar, she said. So he wrote. But Curtis Mayfield, to get to my point before I begin to conclude and hear from some of our people, Curtis Mayfield and Sam Gooden and Fred Cash, the Impressions, when they began to make things like If You Had a Choice of Color, and when they made things like Mighty Mighty Spade and Whitey, and when they made things like It's Gonna Be a Meeting Over Yonder, when they made these kinds of songs, I've heard Curtis say that some of the black disc jockeys, some of the black radio announcers thought that they were becoming too black and thought that they were becoming political. And as a matter of fact, as I conclude today, when they were about to appear on the Joy Bishop show, Joy Bishop's producers, when the Impressions came into the studio to perform Choice of Colors, didn't want them to be on and said he was going to cancel them from being on. And they said, well, why are we here? Because you asked us to come and perform our hit song. They said, but we didn't know your hit song was political. And then Joy Bishop came out. Joy Bishop said, let the guys come on and sing. That's their hit. We're going to go through with this. But the producers of the program did not want that kind of information to come among our people. And when we go back to slavery, we will find that the slave master has always had as his intentions to keep light and knowledge from the slaves, because when people begin to awaken, then you can no longer make him or her a slave. So we're trying to use these telling our stories as a form of awakening to those of you who are listening, and we urge you to tell other people about this series started by Dr. Lafayette Maxwell, Telling Our Stories. Back to you, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. We got to keep on pushing. We can't stop now.
Move up
a
little
higher.
Some
way, somehow. We got our strength,
right,
and it don't make sense
darker than blue.
Not to keep on pushing. All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I hear you over
Let's
there,
hear from
Joe.
Some callers, Brother Mike,
right,
if you don't mind.
African-American Empowerment Saturday. We will, but I got to go to Slido, right? Real quick, before we get to three. All right. Every culture focuses upon and learns from its past. We are the only people that don't want to look back. Saying Kofa means go back and fetch it. What you think about that, Dr. Bruce?
Just to keep it moving, Brother Marvin, I agree with the Slido participant 100%. And to those who may not know, I want to spell that word, Sankofa, S-A-N-K-O-F-A. Sankofa, S-A-N-K-O-F-A. And Sankofa is the name of a bird, and I think it's West Africa, and that's a symbol of that bird, and that bird is twisting its neck and placing its beak on its back, trying to reach its feathers. It's going back, and that has become a symbol for the black consciousness movement to go back, and it means what? Go back and fetch it. So we're trying to go back and fetch our past by telling our stories and hope other people might be inspired.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Next, again, Slido.com. The Jewish community teaches and encourages its people who experienced the Holocaust to never forget, so that it will never happen again. Continue to educate, brothers. All right, so Slido's over there saying we need to learn our history. So,
well, I'm glad
to hear,
Brother Mom,
sister,
because I'm very uncomfortable talking about myself.
All right. Well, you did a great job today. And last Slido, before we go to the lines at 3 o'clock sharp, We should be inspired by our stories. In our culture, we used to sit down and listen to our elders share our stories and traditions. That's how things are passed down.
You know.
All right.
You know, and I'm glad that caller said that, because that gives me that's making me feel a little more at ease about talking about this, because they're very, very correct. And I think about how we sit around the fireplace and tell stories and be very creative and imaginative and talk about our history. And it reminds me of Alex Haley when he was coming up with his information to do Roots, how when he was listening to the griot of West Africa, he was about to go to sleep after listening to the griot, and those are what that's what we call the storytellers in West Africa, griot, G-R-I-O-T, G-R-I-O-T, griot. The griots, and he was listening to the griot, and the griot was talking, and Alex was about to go to sleep. But then all of a sudden, he heard the clan, heard the griot mentioned the Kente clan, and he woke up, and he said, wait a minute, and it was James Earl Jones playing that part in the movie. He said, wait a minute, what did he say? And he had that repeated, but that's where he woke up. He was talking about the Kente clan, and that's where the interest of Alex Haley was in the Kente clan. So telling stories is a part of the African-American heritage and culture, and that's where those toasts that I also like to tell, which is a part of me too, Brother George, those toasts and that poetry like Shine and the Signified Monkey and the Pool Shooting Monkey and One Thin Dime and some of these other things that, oh, man, that's so good, because that's where rap came from, the African oral tradition. If it were not for the African oral tradition, there would be no Biggie and Tupac. There would be no Drake. There would be no Kool Moe Dee. There would be no Sister Soulja and Professor Griff. There would be no Public Enemy and Chuck D if it were not for the African oral tradition of telling stories. And that's what we're doing here today, telling our story. Go ahead, Brother Mom.
We love you,
absolutely.
Brother. We love
all right.
You.
Absolutely. I got one more, and this one is for you, Dr. Bruce. It says, keep going, Dr. Bruce. These are the conversations that we must continue to have with one another. So there it is. It's right there, right in front of us. All right. We're at Slido. Slido.com. Now we're going to go over to the line. 845-277-9250 is the number, and we're going to go down into the lines today. Let's see who's going to be first today. Let's go to 919-4592. You're first. You're up. Do you have a question or comment? You're on Empowerment Saturday, African American Empowerment Saturday. Do you have a question or comment for today's conversation? Welcome.
Yes, I just want to say that. Just want to say I'm enjoying the show. I'm familiar with Dr. Bridges. I've been along for part of his story. And the story I want to tell is when we were about 11 years old, we were in the Inspector Patrol in a parade in Durham, North Carolina. And we both were tall for our age. And I was pretty happy to just be in the parade, but Bruce was upset. He said, man, they got us back here because we're tall. He said, we tall, they ought to have us up front. You know, so I just tell that to show that he was critically thinking seriously at 11 years old.
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you calling the show today. See, Dr. Bruce,
and
all the time.
Okay, let's go to another one, brother.
Okay, all right. Let's go on over to 919-2103. 2103, welcome to the show. You're live. You're on. You have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce. 2103. All right. Thank you for listening.
Am I on?
All right. Yes, I hear you. Welcome to
you
the show.
You can hear
How are
me?
You?
Oh,
yes, ma'am.
I'm okay. I'm listening in, and I can't fathom living in my past. I don't know. It's just something to me. Living in the past can make us bitter. It also makes us hold on to grudges. And sometimes with doing that, we regret wishing that we had done things differently. So to me, living is continuous. It's a linear path. Has nothing to do with going back and fetching anything other than what's before us, what's coming next, what's here now. I mean, I love to hear stories sometimes, but I think it can keep us in a depressive state because the past is only a place of reference, the residence. The past is a place of learning and not a place of living. So
that's
with
good.
Living,
I like that.
How do we go
like
back
that.
To the past? That's not living to me. I mean, I love the story. Dr. Bruce, you gave an excellent past history of yourself and what all the things you went through. And, I mean, my grandmother has a lot of stories to tell. We all got stories. But are they our future? They're not the future. That's what – we can't change what happened yesterday. We can only look forward in a positive direction in order to be living. So with that
all right,
being
thank
said,
you, sister.
Thou said it better. Mm-hmm. Past is depression, future makes you anxious, and the present is peace.
All
right. Hope I didn't interrupt your show, but...
No, not at all. Not at all. This is a
I mean,
show
I
for us to
I
have a dialogue.
Sankofa in a sense that we know why they gave us the bird Sankofa. Look back and fetch what we've lost. Not what we're coming to. We got to let the bird stay back there. Keep on looking back because we're moving forward. We are the progression, not the past. We were here first, and we will be last. So where is the past coming in this?
I don't mean to, you know, to interrupt, but how did you find out the things that you just now said?
Logical thinking. Nothing red.
Something I
feel within.
I'm saying that when you said that we were the first, how did you find that out? That's history.
How did I find it out? I want to say logically, I thought that I really feel that we were the first because out of blackness comes the light, right?
How did
so
you
we
find
have to
that
get
out?
Here first.
No, I'm saying Thank somebody you. Had to tell you that. You didn't just come out the womb and figure these things out. You had to have a foundation. The foundation
okay,
for
so,
life is history, is the past.
Okay, okay
and then
so you said we...
In the present, you use what you learned about the past to exist in the present and to try to make a better future.
True, but you said something about coming out of the womb. You said something about coming out of
the
womb.
You didn't know nothing when you came out the womb. Absolutely.
Who's to say we came out of the womb? Who's to say we came out of the womb?
When you were born, where'd you come from?
Do you recall coming out of the womb? How far back can you remember your beginning?
All right. When you have children, you're telling me that none of us came out of the womb.
That was a passage in which we came out. Yeah, that was a passage. Yeah, we came from that path of being born. But
all right, so
we can only go by what we've been told. I don't know if I came from my mother's womb. That's what she tells me. But did I really come from her womb?
Did you?
She says I did.
All right. Well, I want to jump in right here. Let me jump in. Sister, I thank you for calling. Brother George, I thank you for commenting. Right? This is a good space for – this is why we do the show. Right? So we can have dialogue and communication about perspective, right, from the African-American perspective. It doesn't have to be right, doesn't have to be wrong, right? Nobody, if this is the perspective that she's sharing, is hers and hers to own, right? We all have different lenses and different perspectives that we can share in our community and in our cultures and how we see the world. And some of our people don't want to look back. I understand why. It's a hard look back. But there are, on the other side of that, there is a really beautiful, rich tradition that we forgot about. And in order for us to relearn or recapture our minds, we're going to have to do the work of knowing who that was. And we've been shaped and reformed and even reconstituted, right? So a part of evolving forward is to understand where we've been, how we got here, and then how we can improve to me. So, sister, I want to thank you, but we're going to move on now to another caller. But continue to listen to the show, right? We're looking forward to seeing your number again and having
I'm
more
gonna,
conversation
I'm gonna
with
listen,
you.
But I'm going to leave you with this one word, history.
All right.
His story.
All right.
That's it.
I like
you.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, sister. See, that's what I like, Dr. Bruce, Brother George. All right.
Yeah, Brother Mark,
his story.
I wanted to
let's go to another one. Let's see who else we got listening today.
Go ahead, Brother George.
I didn't want the sister to feel like I meant to offend her, and if I offended her in any way, you know, I apologize, you know, because that
okay,
wasn't.
All right. I think it was a good dialogue to me. All right. Let's go to 0673. 0673, you're up next. You have a question, a comment, statement.
Yeah, hold up. Kevlon. Yeah, we need
hey,
to have a dialogue because you never get to – you never get to the top of the pyramid if you don't have a type of dialogue. So I'm listening to what's been said. And the problem with not ignoring history is that I know a person who has three generations of breast cancer. And she goes to a doctor. The doctor says, do you have a history of breast cancer in your family? And she said to that doctor, history not important. How can that doctor heal her? I just
want
to put that to the table and continue with the program. Brother Bruce, you always you're good. That's all I got to say. I'm letting go. I enjoy your program. I enjoy what you bring to the table.
And you know what, Brother
all
Brother
right,
Kevlon, okay, let me just make one quick comment, Brother Kevlon, too, which I meant to do from the beginning, but I really forgot about it. I want to commend him for an excellent program on last week, and I talked to several people who enjoyed his program, and they're looking forward to Brother Akevalon, the last caller, listeners, who if you don't know him, the last caller was Brother Akevalon. He was on last week. We're looking for him to come back sometime soon, and that was very good.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go, Brother Mommy. I know we got some more.
All right. Akevalon is there. Thank you, brother.
I appreciate it.
All right. All right, let's go down to, looks like 3347, 3347, 919-3347 is next. You're up, you're live. Do you have a question, comment, statement for Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself? Welcome to the show. 3347. All right, let's move on to 9282, you're up next. 804-9282, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. First of all, let me say peace, brothers and sisters, all within the sound of my voice. This is Brother Booker. I'm back in Richmond, Virginia here after being sick while I was on the West Coast and getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm back, brother, and glad to be a part of the show. Beautiful program, and I just want to add about this whole topic of the past and what Dr. Bruce has been talking about and so forth, Brother George. I will say this. If you truly know who you are, if you truly know who you are, who we are, if we truly know who we really are, the original man and woman, the children of God, the creators of it all, then your past isn't that important. Because as God said, I am today as I was yesterday. And I will be tomorrow. I do not change. So what I did yesterday, I'm going to do today, and I'm going to do tomorrow. There is no change in me in how I'm going to function because I am who I am, and I know who I am. If you know who you really are, okay? Short of that, though, and I must admit I'm one of those who did not know who I was and still searching for myself. When I say I'm searching for the God in me, I've got to look back. I've got to find from which I came to identify who I am. Because I even read where a wise white man said, to understand the present and the past, you must first understand the present and the future. You must first understand your past. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And would lead me to say, if I find myself tomorrow morning in the presence of God, and God would give me permission to ask him some questions. The first question I would ask God is this the life you wanted me to have? Mm. And if he tells me yes, I'm then going to say why. And if he says no, I'm then going to ask, how did I get here? And then the final question I'm going to ask him, God, is then what should my life look like? If I was living the life you wanted me to have, what would that look like, God? Because I don't know, you know. But I want to know, is this the life you intended for me to have? That's the first thing I would ask God. Is this the life you intended for me to have, you know? And let me leave with this,
yes,
brother. I'm going to say to us brothers and sisters, if this system that we live in, fail, what will we do? If this system we live in fails, what will we do? And I'll leave it
great
at
question.
That.
Great question.
Thank
you, brother.
For the opportunity.
I appreciate
Thank
you.
Thank you. Peace.
All right.
Thank you, brother. Peace.
All right. Peace, brother. I hope you feel better. That's Brother Booker.
Thank you, sir.
We are also going to come up with our next episode of the Peace Magazine. You want to get a copy of that. The brother does a really great job of putting that thing down. All right, let's go back to Slido real quick. Integration was really traumatic for many of our people. It forced integration created an identity crisis along with imposter syndrome. Mm. How about that, Dr. Bruce? Do you feel that way about forced integration?
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. Imposter syndrome. I like the way they put that.
Uh-huh. That's somebody that know what they're talking about. All right, let's go back to the lines. We're going over to 5430, 919-5430. Are you there? Do you have a question or comment? 5430.
Yes. On. Hello?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good evening. Good afternoon to all the brothers. My name is Adrian Neely. I'm from Durham by way of Winston-Salem.
all right.
And I just, Bruce don't like to talk about this about himself, but I'm going to talk about him for a second. He went back in the late 60s, early 70s. I would go to the library, which he talked about earlier. And I was always, that brother said, this tall brother was always here when I come. Who is this brother?
What library was that? Stafford Warren Library. Oh, you're talking about one on Fayetteville Street. Right, right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I was talking about the one in MacDougall Terrace, but that's good. I just wanted to clear that up. Right. The Stafford,
right.
I was
oh,
at the one. I might have been at both of them.
Well, we know you've been both of them.
All the time when I went.
That's right.
But you're always there. You're always reading the newspaper or book. You always had a nice brim on. I said, every time I come to this library, this brother is in here. But then, he's well read, and I would always have it. I can't remember when we started, when we had a, became friends, but he had a bookstore downtown. I forgot the name of the street. And then and the bookstore on Fairwood Street. But we've had a lot of conversations, and of course, I read his book, Recapturing the African Mind. So I'm just grateful to have a brother like that, you know, in my life, and I call a friend, and I've been enjoying the show, and I learn from the past. I don't live in the past. I learn from the past, right?
Mm.
I have to learn from the past, and so I just stop right there. Thank y'all.
And you know, caller, before you hang up, too, I did want to mention to Brother Martin and Brother George that this brother is a drug addiction counselor, and he would always have me, and this relates back to what we're talking about now, he would always have me to come up, and Adrian, what was that group that you'd always have me to come speak for downtown?
Oh, at the Criminal Justice Resource Center. Yeah, I had a group that I facilitated down there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that group was
a group of people who were formerly incarcerated who were trying to, you know, put it together, and we helped them get jobs and things like that.
And the point that I want to make is, going back to the information about the past, you would always want me, if you recall, Adrian, to go back and talk to them about the past and talk about the lives of people who have been incarcerated or people who may have been addicted to drugs, if that were the case with them. I'm not saying they all were, but you'd always want me to talk about Malcolm X and Malcolm's past and what he came from and how he became, to show the importance of the past, didn't you?
Yes, sir, because they didn't know. They did not know, never had that instruction. So I would deviate from the curriculum and invite you in, because I knew that if you mentioned to them about your past, they would be more attentive to what you had to say, as opposed to some of the other people that that would facilitate the group. So I would always invite you, and they always enjoyed you.
Right now, and I know you're not there now. I hope you're bringing me in is not the reason that you're not there now. Thank you, brother.
I still help folks. I don't work for them, but I still help folks. I have to because
tune in with us every Saturday we're on.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. Yeah. I can't forget.
All right. Thank you, brother.
I'm always healthy. Yes, sir.
All right, thank you for calling. All right, interesting. We find Dr. Bruce in several libraries. See how things unfold? All right, let's go back to the lines. 540-7974, you're up next. 7974, welcome to the show. You have a question or comment?
Hi, yes, I just wanted to say thanks, Dr. Bruce, for sharing your story. I think one of the things that you talked about that resonated with me was the sense of belonging that you lost when you went to the white school. And I think reiterating that sense of belonging in terms of seeing yourself, right, and having that affirmation and people encouraging you and feeling like you truly belonged there. We all have this sense of needing to belong. And when you lose that, that can be really powerful, and that's a lot of the time what's happening with our kids in school today. They don't see themselves in the literature, in the books. They don't see themselves in the teacher. About 85% of the teachers that finish their programs are white women. Mm. So when you think about white women being in the classroom, and that's why they have so many initiatives to get black men, black women in the classroom, and it's a whole other story. But again, if this is what you perpetually see yourself, and when we talk about seeing ourselves, that goes the same way for white people, right? So if I'm a white teacher and I can see that the white student in my class made a mistake or was being talking back, I could see that person as my little cousin. I could see them as my daughter, right? So I'm going to go easier on them. Most likely, I'm not going to give them the same type of harsh treatment. But if I can't see you, then that's going to turn into sassy talk. That's going to turn into me making you an adult and adultifying you as a black child before you even get to adult age. And so that sense of belonging is oftentimes ripped away from us in the classroom through those cultural dynamics. The other thing I wanted to say is that I do think history is a blueprint for the past. Blueprints are looked at to see where you're going, how you're going to shape yourself, you know, whether it's a blueprint for a building, a way. I really do feel like history is a blueprint for our future. And I don't think that if it wasn't so important, the people in the majority, white people or people in power, wouldn't have tried so hard to rewrite it and erase it from us. I think that understanding the testimony that we have is affirmation for our people to continue. And I think even in the black church, we know when we talk about testimony, we know how we feel. I can speak to how I feel when I know if I'm in a similar situation that someone has made it out of. And so I think that testimony for our people is really important as a cultural affirmation to our future and how we can make it through. And the last thing I'll say is I think we get tools and resources, right, built on the knowledge from the past. It doesn't procure that we are not going to look to the future and ahead, I don't see history as linear. I see it as something that is more cyclical. And so when we think about history, if we don't know it, we're doomed to repeat ourselves. So I definitely don't see it as linear. And I think the more that you know, and obviously through this program and your stories really reminded me of some of the things that we have to continue, right, to build up in our education system and that sense of belonging. And I know for kids that I work with, particularly in college, which is why we try to do so much to build that sense of belonging, that hasn't went away. If anything, after segregation, it's gotten worse. And so that's one of the reasons it's really important for us to continue to build this legacy of understanding the past so that we can continue to procure a future for our kids where they can be successful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That's Dr. A. Vent Brown right there. Last month, 2 months ago, she couldn't talk at all. So if y'all know anything about our story, thank you, wife. She had a stroke, and you can see she can flow with it. So thank you for joining us today, and welcome back for comments for the show. All right, Dr. Bruce, we're going over to let's go to 5347. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question or comment?
What's up, my brothers?
Hey.
Hey, brother
Red.
Yeah, this is Brother Red.
Right.
How you doing?
Welcome to the show. Doing good, sir. Doing good.
All right, then, my brothers. I want to thank Brother Bruce always, man, for enlightening us with his knowledge and helping us out to understand a whole lot of things about history and our past. And I've been just sitting here listening to others with their knowledge and comments, and was just thinking while the young lady was just talking then, and was thinking about a conversation that Bruce and I had just a few days ago, and Dr. Maxwell and I had, I think it was last weekend. And I was alluding to a conversation that I just had. I got on the show a little late today because a young brother and I was talking about Freemasonry. And I was tying it in with the conversation with Brother Maxwell and Dr. Bruce and I was having. And thinking about history and our past, for all you that are listening, thinking about what we've come through and where we are now, and thinking about tying our history and our past together. Without a foundation, brothers, if I might make this comment, I'm going to make it real quick, Brother Byron. I don't want to waste you guys' time. But communications and information is so important. About where we are now and what's going on in our society now and political, structure, what's going on with us every day, our issues and what's happening around us. Without, you guys know, we can see what's going on with us. And
yes, Brother Red, I got to hold you right there because we real tough on time right now. I hate to. We'll get back to you next week, but I got to get final comments from Dr. Bruce. I hate to cut you off, but we're really close to time. Closing comments, Dr. Bruce, Brother Red, thank you, and thank you all for listening, Dr. Bruce.
Yes, sir, brother Marvin, and also to the callers and to Brother George, you and going back again to tie into our topic. As I said before, I did do a little elementary school poetry, and I just came up with this just while we were talking. These are my last comments for today, and this is completely original. If we as a people are really going to last, we have to hold on to and cannot forget our past.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. All right, Brother George.
It was a great show, brother. Thank you again, Bruce. Thank you.
All right. That's it for this week. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And thank you all for listening, right? Those are online listening, as well as those who are on the call-in line. Without you, the show could not go on. So we thank you all for listening. Thank you all for joining the show. It's African American Empowerment, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. This week, the word is unity, umoja. Continue to practice umoja and become the best person that you can be today and every day. It's the only way. And also, Dr. Bruce is available for commencements, family reunions, book signings, community events and activities. Check them out, look them up, and we'll talk to y'all next week right here on African American Empowerment. Peace and blessings. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.